Good afternoon and welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to Kildare's KFM. It is Wednesday, the 25th of October. Caoimhe Hearney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll be speaking to Geraldine Herbert. She is the motoring editor at the Sunday Independent. And we'll be hearing the latest Dundeel survey is showing that the demand for EVs has reached its highest level of 23% this month. Then we'll speak to Owen Corrie, of course, editor of Air and Travel magazine, because there are a few new routes to the USA that will be announced in the next few hours, and Owen Corrie will tell us the latest. And he'll be also telling us about the DAA, which have detected a few fake social media accounts that are pretending to be Dublin Airport and selling things online. Fiona O'Loughlin, of course, Fianna Fáil senator, will tell us about the Stop Stigma campaign. It's a campaign for proper menstrual and menopause policy within the workplace. And then lastly, we'll hear about the Oireachtas essay competition for Kildare students, where you could be in with a chance to win €6,000. So do stay tuned if you are a senior cycle student, or of course if you are a parent with a senior cycle student in school. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in 045 898 999. You can email me to studio@kfmradio.com, or you can send us in a WhatsApp or text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the latest Dundeel survey has found that electric vehicles have 23% share of demand for new cars in October. It's the highest since the beginning of the year, with hybrids close behind at 21%. Together, they claim a combined market share of 44% of new car demand. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor at the Sunday Independent. Good afternoon, Geraldine.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Geraldine, I suppose good news for EV dealers, or for people who are looking after the environment or trying to get people to move away from diesel and petrol cars. Quite a strong demand there for EVs still.
Yeah, definitely a lot of interest. And what is interesting from the Dundeel survey is that actually the most searched for car is an electric car, the Volkswagen ID4, and it was the most popular new car across all fuel types. So that really is interesting. And I suppose what we're seeing is that when people are searching for cars and they're searching for electric cars, I suppose, are in that mix of potential cars now. So whether they're going out and buying them this month or next month or 6 months down the road, it definitely means people are becoming far more aware of them, and they're becoming, as I said, an option that they're willing to consider.
Okay, electric vehicles currently account for 18% of new cars registered this year in Ireland up to September. That was according to CIMAI data. But there still is a gap between this figure and the 23% share of the demand on the new car buyers on Dundeel. Why do you think that is, Geraldine?
I think that's very understandable in the sense that people search for things before they actually then go and buy them. So I think the fact that they're searching for them, as I said, means that they're thinking to themselves, you know what, I might consider an EV, let's see what's out there. So I think no more than other stuff when we're online, we do generally look for things before we make our final decision. So it's good to see that they are being searched, but I wouldn't say that there's that gap is anything that remarkable. I think that's the way people work. It takes them a while to make that mindset. And it is quite a different purchase an EV is than a petrol or diesel. I think it's not quite the big dramatic change that people think it is until they actually get into it, and when they speak to somebody who has one, I think they could reassure them. But I think, I suppose it takes a bit of time to find out what's out there, what sort of prices are there before they make that leap, and that's what we're seeing people doing.
Yeah, and I see here that it says demand for new EVs is up 45% year on year since the beginning of 2023. So that change in mindset definitely shifting, even though, it seems to be a lot quicker in the last few years, but slowly but surely.
Yeah, I think what we really see this year is there's far more choice in the EV new car market. There's better pricing. There's cheaper entrance from the Chinese car market. So definitely there's more options out there for people. I think what's also interesting, Dundeel had a report earlier in the month, and they were saying that they have now three times as many used EVs on their site than they did this time last year. So that's a really positive thing for people, because the majority of people are not in the new car market. They're going to be buying secondhand. And I suppose a lot of them feel excluded from EVs at the moment if, the only options are new ones. But the growth in the second-hand market is happening slowly but surely. The more new ones that are sold, the more they filter down. So it's good to see that that's, increasing quite steadily.
Yeah, and electric vehicles making up 50% of the top 10 most in-demand premium new cars over €50,000 amongst consumers on Done Deal. But 50,000, quite a big sum of money for most people, Geraldine. So like you said there, it's good to see more second-hand cars coming on stream. Again, in top spot, no surprise, the Volkswagen ID4. That has been quite popular over the last couple of months, hasn't it?
That has sold really, really well. And actually, it's the only electric car that's in the top five best-selling cars, you know, across all fuel types in Ireland. Yeah. And it came in at number five. So that's really good to see when an electric car can actually do that. What's interesting as well is the top-selling car in September. Now, in fairness, September is not a big month for car sales. You know, they tend to happen. Very few people sort of buy at the end of the year. They wait till January. But the best-selling car overall was the Tesla Model Y. So that shows when you start to get electric cars outselling petrol and diesel, you know, you do definitely see that shift in the market.
Okay, Tesla Model Y. Mercedes-Benz EQE also in the top five, and Volkswagen ID5. The ID5 slightly bigger than the ID4, is it?
Kind of a coupe version, so okay. More of a different body shape rather than anything much, much bigger, really. It's kind of a more sleeker design, probably less family practical, but yeah, a kind of more coupe design of the ID4.
Okay, the Kia EV6, Geraldine, I don't think I'm familiar with this car. I might not have seen it around. That's quite popular too.
Yeah, it's funny actually. I was only literally the other day, I was stopped at the traffic lights and there were two EV6s in front of me, and I thought, this is now, you're getting to the stage where electric cars are really becoming mainstream when you see two exactly the same beside each other. So yeah, now that would be a slightly more pricier, I suppose, electric car than what's in the top five. It comes in at just over the 50,000 mark. But yeah, very, very popular and selling very well for Kia.
Okay, is that an SUV?
No, it's slightly higher off the ground than a hatchback, but they don't describe it as an SUV. It's sort of somewhere in between, as a kind of saloon and an SUV.
Okay. It seems very popular nowadays that there's kind of like hybrid Jeep/cars. Like, it's, you don't have your small cars and then you don't have your really big Jeeps, but there's somewhere in between where they're like almost risen off the ground and they look like a Jeep but they're not.
Yeah, a lot of car makers have done this over the last kind of decade, and what they've discovered is if you take a kind of standard hatchback and then you give it a kind of chunky look with an SUV styling, you can charge more for it and you can sell more because people, you know, they like that sort of styling. So we've seen a huge growth of those over the last decade. And I suppose car makers have created the demand, then consumers have bought them, and this in turn has fueled more and more of them. So yeah, there's a huge number of those sort of cars coming on the market. But what we see now is a kind of new shape coming with EVs, because EVs don't need to be heavy. And in fact, the heavier they are, the less range you get out of the battery. So I think what we are going to see, in the same way as the EV6 is a bit different, the IONIQ 6 from Hyundai is the same. We're seeing new shapes of cars coming in. So this kind of, it's interesting to see the design and how it's going to evolve over the next few years.
Absolutely. Geraldine, I have to ask the question that I've wanted to ask you for a long time. Do you drive an electric car yourself?
See, I drive a different car every week. Now, okay. That sounds very glamorous, but it's not. So literally, I'm test driving cars constantly. Sometimes I'm driving two different ones a week. Now, that said, the vast majority of new cars that have been launched now are electric. So most times I'm in electric, but you will find me sometimes in a petrol and sometimes very rarely in a diesel. It does happen.
Okay, well then that's great, because then I can ask you this question. What is your favourite car? Money's no object here now. Well, look, first we'll go maybe for the higher end and you can tell us.
This is a really unfair question, because over the years I have become so fussy, and I don't even know if there's a favourite car out there. I'd probably end up with a garage at this stage, because I take, you know, the look of one, the engine of the other, the seats from one. That's how fussy I've become. So it's a really hard question for me.
Okay, so you're not going to give us an answer?
No.
Oh, for God's sake.
Because I'll have put down the phone, I'll have thought, damn, I forgot about such and such.
So when
I win the lottery, I'll buy my dream garage.
Will you give us like a top three then?
Oh God, a top three. I tell you, if money was no object, I'd buy myself a Porsche 911, definitely, because they're just one of these cars that have just evolved over time and they're just gorgeous. The Mazda MX-5 to me is one of my favourite cars of all time. I'd even buy a 20-year-old one. I love them that much. And after that, I don't know. I'd end up buying another. I'd probably buy myself a BMW i4, actually. In terms of electric cars, I really, really like them.
BMW i4. Okay, well, you heard it here first. People texting in here, electric cars aren't worth the damn if you live in the countryside. Plus, the range isn't as good as they claim when you're stuck in traffic.
Well, when you're stuck in traffic, the range is perfect, actually, because you're not actually using any electric range, unlike when you're sitting, if your fuel is running out in bumper-to-bumper traffic, you're going to watch it going down. The issue with the range is most of the brand-new cars have range of anything from 400 to 500 kilometres. It's got that good. The problem is if you're on a motorway and you're driving very fast, you know, if you're up at the 120, you are going to see your range deplete, but by the same token, you'll see your fuel deplete as well, not quite as fast. You do have to be careful in that sense, but definitely the range is more than adequate for most people.
Okay, something that I noticed, I don't have an electric car, but I always either see no chargers, like one charger in a place where everyone's trying to get in on them, or numerous chargers with no one using them. And it's almost like I don't know if you've ever noticed that, Geraldine. Like, do you think we're getting better in terms of how many chargers we have at each station, at each garage?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of problems with the chargers we have, right? First of all, the government is spending $100 million on the charging infrastructure, and the ESB are rolling out some of the really fast chargers, and we'll see a lot of those over the next 12 months. And they're really what's needed to reassure people who are going, say, from one side of the country to the other, that if I stop in a filling station, it'll take me, for the time it'll take me to have a quick cup of coffee, you know, I'll be charged up and that's fine. The problem is, in terms of numbers, we've lots of chargers, but a lot of them are the standard chargers, and they're great if you're in work and you're parked for 7 or 8 hours, or you're going to the cinema and going for a meal afterwards and you have 3 or 4 hours, but they're useless if you're going across the country and you've screaming kids in the back of the car and you just want to top up very quickly in 20 or 30 minutes. So we definitely need more fast chargers, and there are parts of the country that are better served than others in terms of the charging infrastructure, so it is patchy at the moment.
Okay, one listener in here saying, looking to get a small new electric car in January, can Geraldine give any tips?
Yeah, I would look at the MG4. It's actually the fifth best-selling electric car. It's 30,000 or 31,000, has a range of about 400 kilometres, and I have two tall teenagers, and I had no issues for a week ferrying them in the back and sitting in the front. So it's a lovely family car, decent sized boot and everything, and definitely worth checking out.
Okay, Geraldine, thanks a million. Whenever you get that Porsche, you can swing by KFM.
Bring your first spin.
Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor at the Sunday Independent. Thanks very much, Geraldine, for joining us. If you're a person who hasn't sat their driving test yet, or maybe you failed it a few times or whatever, well, fear not, because Nicola Sturgeon, Scotland's former First Minister, shared good news on social media today, saying that she passed her driving test for the first time at the tender age of 53. She said the experience of learning to drive in later years was proof that it was never too late to do something new. Writing on Instagram, she said, "So this happened today at the tender age of 53. I passed my driving test first time. I couldn't have done it without my instructor." So there you go. Some food for thought if you're thinking of maybe learning to drive or taking up a new hobby or something like that. It's never too late. My own grandmother, 70 years of age, I think she was, when my granddad died, and she never drove. And then she learned how to drive when she was 70. Now, I don't think she drove many places. She used to just drive around Eadstown, go up to Mass. Maybe the odd time she'd go to Nace. But she used to drive a little Citroen Saxo, and it was kind of a mustard colour. So you'd always see her booting down the road. I don't know if she knew about the brake, but she definitely was well able to drive. So yeah, we send our best wishes over to Nicola Sturgeon, and she's given me food for thought anyway on maybe starting something new, because it doesn't matter how old you are, you can always start something new. Now, Lonely Planet has declared that Donegal is the fourth best region in the world to visit in 2024. It is coming ahead of places like southern Thailand, the Swahili coast in Tanzania, and Montana in the United States. The leading travel media company unveiled the accolade today in the prestigious Lonely Planet's Best in Travel 2024. It's a collection of the world's hottest trends, destinations and experiences for the coming year. So great news there for Donegal. I've only ever been to Donegal once, so I'm going to have to go back there in the next few months, definitely. I don't know if going to Donegal in winter is the best idea, but just to give you a flavour of the top 10 regions that Lonely Planet have announced for the best in travel in 2024. Number one, Western Balkans, Transdenarcia, cycling route. I don't know if I said that right, but anyway. Number two, Kangaroo Island in Australia. Number three, Tuscany in Italy. Number four, Donegal here in Ireland. Pass Vasco, number five in Spain. Southern Thailand, number six. Swahili Coast, Tanzania, number seven. Montana, USA, number eight. Saalfelden, Leogang, Austria. And far north in Scotland in at number 10. So there you go. We'll all have to head over to Donegal in the next few months. Number four in the Lonely Planet's Best in Travel. Coming up after the break, we'll be hearing from Travel Magazine editor Owen Corrie, because there's some new routes to the USA, and there's also some fake social media accounts selling bags claiming to be from Dublin Airport. Don't go away.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, yet another scam. The DAA is urging people not to fall for the latest scam doing the rounds at Dublin Airport. Apparently, realistic accounts have been appearing online pretending to sell off lost luggage. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Owen Corrie, editor of Air and Travel magazine, and of course, Ardclock resident. Good afternoon, Owen.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Yours for €2. What could possibly go wrong?
Tell us about this, Owen. People selling off random bags. Where are they getting these bags?
I don't think the bags actually exist. It's basically somebody pretending to be Dublin Airport saying, we have all these lost bags in the big hall and we'll sell them off for €2. And they also have satisfied customers. So, you know, there's a few of those. And fake queries coming in as well. So it's a little bit more elaborate than the normal guy trying to smuggle his money out of Nigeria. It's something, you know, that they've put a bit of verification in, but Dublin Airport had to go on X, as it's called now, no longer Twitter, and say, don't be fooled. I'm not sure anybody would have been fooled, but they did come on and say, we don't sell lost bags. We do have a process through the website where you can relocate a bag, and you must come with valid ID. There's no question of us going to auction with the lost bags. So, and there were quite a few of those last year, fewer of them this year.
Okay, so Dublin Airport do not sell lost bags, and they're not trying to clear out their warehouse, as this fake account is claiming. €2 as well is not a huge amount of money, so people might think, oh, sure, you know, I'll give it a go, I'll spend a tenner, and you never know what I might get. Obviously, they get nothing.
Well, I don't know if €2 is the end price, because I actually didn't rush on myself to try and buy one. I would suspect that once they have your €2, they're going to go after something else. They may even just be looking for your bank account details. It sounds a lot of trouble to go to try and get €2 off a customer. So I would be very, very suspicious that there's something bigger. Dublin Airport's advice, interestingly enough, is to report them to Meta, who own Facebook, and get the post removed. I would have thought that somebody would be interested in actually chasing down who's up to this. Or maybe they think it's just too elaborate and too difficult to actually catch whoever is doing it. But there is an upside, and it does bring focus on the lost property in Dublin Airport, and the way that sometimes things get left there for a long, long time. I once dropped a phone in the car park and had to go and to the lost property office, and very, very kindly somebody picked it up. It was in the dark, and I dropped my mobile phone, and it did emerge. It fell out of my pocket or something, but I did emerge that somebody had picked it up. And I was given a little tour, an unofficial tour, off the record tour, of the things that are left behind. And there were some fascinating things in that great big store. It's in Aladdin's Cave. The most interesting was somebody left an oxygen tank behind. How can you survive without your oxygen tank? But there's a lot of stuff in Dublin Airport that has taken ages to be reclaimed. And if there's an upside to this, it's brought attention to the fact that don't give up. Things do show up.
Okay, well, that's given me a little bit of hope, because back in January, I went on a hen to Prague and bought a Child of Prague.
A hen to Prague, I'm scared already, Caoimhe.
Went to Prague, got a little Child of Prague in, you know, the city that makes them or whatever, came home and anyway, I left it on the plane and I was going on holidays like the following week again, and I went into Dublin Airport and they were like, yeah, no, we don't have it. So you never know, it still might turn up. So
it still might turn up. It might turn up in another airport as well. You know, my daughter is the world champion at leaving her mobile phone behind, and one of them got left in a seat pocket on a Czech airline. It's funny, we have a Czech theme to this. And it did show up after about 3 days in Zurich or somewhere. But they do show up. People tend to, you know, if aircraft work hard for a living, like Saturday's Child, they wake up in the morning, they work hard for a living. Each Ryanair aircraft would take off and land 6 times a day. So they can end up being traveling around the world. Now, the awkward bit from the passengers is it will end up in the lost property of the airport where it's found by cleaners. And sometimes the cleaning is very, very quick, and sometimes it doesn't show up where you've actually lost it.
Okay.
They do show up. A lot of things do show up eventually. Some of them never do.
You're telling me, Owen, earlier on that there are a few new routes out today that you're going to tell us about.
This is so exciting. We have a new airline coming to Dublin next year. They're going to do a sort of a lower-cost transatlantic service. We have a bit of competition on both the routes they've announced today, which is JFK to Dublin and Boston to Dublin. It's JetBlue. They're a low-cost airline, not quite the Ryanair, a little bit different model from them. And they already fly transatlantic to London and Paris. But they've announced Dublin today from both Boston and New York. And it should jazz up the market. We've 3 airlines competing on Boston and now 4 competing on New York. And competition, as we both know, Caoimhe, brings down price. It's going to be daily, seasonal, March 13th to September 30th. But I'd be very confident that it will go through the winter. It's good news for Irish tourism and it's good news for anyone popping off to New York. Sadly, not for the Christmas shopping trip. It won't be ready for that. But anyone popping over to New York for the friends and relatives to go shopping next summer, it's a new service.
Well, it's interesting
JetBlue
that you say that, because I was actually looking up flights to New York there recently and I thought they were fairly reasonable, even for, you know, in the next few months. They seem to be not too bad in comparison to previously. Maybe it was just the day that I looked it up, but maybe they know that the competition is coming and they're already dropping the prices.
Not really. The winter prices will come down anyway because the Americans don't travel. The Irish people have a more even-handed approach, but Americans tend to come in a little bit of a rush of about 10 weeks. September's a big month for them. October, they actually come in a little bit later than the traditional school holidays. But it's very uncertain, Caoimhe, because of that terrible conflict in the Middle East, mm-hmm. whether Americans will stop booking anywhere. That's tended to happen before. It happened a few times when we'd come. They don't see much of a difference between the Middle East and Europe, and it does stop them travelling. They also tend not to travel very much during election year. Now, where is that going to be relevant to our listeners here? Is that if the aircraft don't fill early, you do get pretty good incentives thrown in. I would expect if you're travelling next summer that there will be a pretty good series of seat sales from all the operators on the route, including the new one, JetBlue. But remember, American and Delta also fly to New York. Delta and United also fly to New York, and American have a couple of other interesting routes, including Dallas, which is a fairly new one to them. And we do have 16 different, we've 20 different cities, 16 Aer Lingus routes to New York next summer. That's a huge lift for an island of our size, and it should mean that prices are pretty good for getting there and getting back. But I would caution people that prices in America are just through the roof. It's really expensive, when you go over there, prices on the ground because of the strong dollar. And it's a bit of a shock when you go out for what used to, go out for breakfast and end up paying €60 or something like that. Prices on the ground in America are a little bit higher, but we will get there cheaper thanks to this new route from JetBlue announced today.
Okay. Owen Curry, editor of Air and Travel Magazine. Thanks very much, Owen, as always.
Always a great pleasure, Caoimhe. Thank you.
Mag has texted in, Mag O'Keefe in Newbridge. She said a lot of these scams result in people signing up to a subscription service, which they don't realise. So these scammers can make a lot of money. That was in relation to the DAA saying that there's a number of fake social media accounts pretending to be Dublin Airport, selling off what they claim to be lost baggage. Now, Dublin Airport have said lost baggage is never sold, so that will never happen. But an interesting point there by Mag, that maybe you might sign up to a subscription service and then they'll just continue to take out to your or whatever. Maybe you don't read the fine print and you're charged. And the same thing happened to me actually recently. I didn't realise that I was signed up to WordPress from like of whatever amount of years ago in college or whatever. Looked at my account and I was thinking, God, I thought I didn't think I spent that much money at the weekend. €140 was taken out by WordPress. So, yeah, I need to get onto them. And it's annoying when these things happen. Same with some of my subscriptions to, you know, internet or whatever, your TV. You're paying €40 and then it goes over the year and next thing you're paying £90 and you can't get anyone on the phone. Anyway, I could rant all day about that, but we won't go into it. I don't want to bore you. But if you are a Lego fan, Lego is opening its second store in Dublin tomorrow morning. It's located on level 2 of the Blanchardstown Centre and the company is hosting a free kids Halloween ghost hunt all weekend this weekend and just to celebrate, I suppose. So if you're looking for something to do with the children this weekend, you can bring them up to Blanchardstown Centre where the Lego store is opening and you'll have the free kids Halloween ghost hunt all weekend there. I'm sure that'll be a great for the children. Taylor Swift has impressed parents of her new boyfriend, of course, Travis Kelce. Anyone who's a Swiftie like myself will know already that she has a new boyfriend. Thank God. I'm delighted for her because she gets a bad rap, Taylor Swift, and I'm a big fan of hers. Travis's dad, Ed, has told People magazine that the singer is a very, very sweet, very charming, down-to-earth young woman, and he adds she didn't get the diva memo and is always cleaning up after everyone in the Premier Suites at Travis's NFL games. So there you go, she's a cleaner as well. Taylor and Travis have been rumoured to be dating since first being spotted together in September, and I think the rumour is no longer there. I mean, it's fairly out there for people. Someone has texted in now and said, hi, what that lady was saying about electric cars is not true. I have a BMW i4, it costs 90k. You will only get approximately 350 kilometres on a full charge. It is always updating its info and using electricity. People shouldn't put themselves in debt for an electric car. They are way too expensive and not worth it. It will absolutely make no difference to global warming. Well, so says this listener, texter. And in the world as a whole, for example, if everyone in Ireland drove an electric car, it would make no difference to the world's climate, because if you look across the water in England, Manchester has 4 times the population of Ireland. So unless everyone in the world is on board, it's a personal thing to make people feel better, and an expensive choice people don't need. If you look on CarZone, etc., people are selling their electric cars after 1 or 2 years old. So says this person. I cannot confirm that. And what else are they saying here? Yeah, they say they're selling them at a great loss, apparently. Again, I can't verify if that's true. So if they were that good, people won't be selling them so quickly. No name on that message. But look, I suppose it depends on the kind of driver that you are as well. Electric cars won't suit everyone. I would assume electric cars would be better for people living within big cities where they have access to chargers and maybe are doing shorter trips. Perhaps, you know, if you live in the Midlands, or maybe if you live anywhere where you've to travel to work for long periods of time, it might not be ideal. But again, I don't have an electric car, so I am not too sure. We'll take a quick break, and coming up next, we will be hearing about an Oireachtas essay competition for Kildare students, where you could be in with a chance to win €6,000 in prize money. So don't go away.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, local Fianna Fáil Senator and Chair of the Oireachtas Women's Caucus, Fiona O'Loughlin, joins me on the line, and she has weighed in behind Forsa's Stop the Stigma campaign, which is a campaign for proper menstrual and menopause policy within the workplace. Good afternoon, Fiona.
Good afternoon to you, Caoimhe.
Fiona, this is a very, I suppose, important thing for, I mean, 50% of the population, but it still is a huge taboo in many places.
There is, and it's wonderful to see so many different unions coming together to stop the stigma, and that's the name of the campaign. So yesterday evening we had representatives from FORSA, INMO, Unite the Union, CIPTU, the Communication Workers Union, the Financial Services Union, to name just a few. And essentially it really is trying to, I suppose, increase awareness, increase education in the workplace about the importance of understanding what all of us go through in terms of biological processes, and just to ensure that the support is there. So Finlay Shea, and many of us would know Phil through her work with the INMO, and she was very, very strong and very vocal. We had a panel of herself, Julia Cooper and Olivia Henry in relation to it. And we've never had as many women working in the workforce as now. And that's really, really important. But also it's important that we support those women and that we have policies in place. For example, and you're familiar, Caoimhe, with the period poverty motion that we had from the Women's Caucus a number of years ago, and that then became government policy. Part of that was not just about trying to ensure that menstrual products would be available free of charge in our schools, in our public buildings and workplaces, etc. But it was about trying to take away the stigma. For example, before we had that motion, the word period only appeared in 100 years of records in the Dáil 12 times. Yes. So menstruation or period was only used 12 times. Thankfully now that has changed. But we've seen a lot more openness and honesty and a lot more debate about the menopause. And we want to keep women in the workforce. We don't want women to feel once the reach the stage where they're going through menopause, which is early 50s, etc., that it's difficult to keep on working, particularly those in places like one of the unions last night they were talking about, it was 80% men, and they felt quite uncomfortable. There was a lot of surveys done in all of the different unions, and there was 6,109 surveys done altogether. But it was quite clear from the survey results that there was a lot of joking in the workplace. And I appreciate that many people, you know, make jokes, not realising that it has a negative impact on the recipient. You know, sometimes we don't want to be too PC.
No, but you do hear that, like, where if someone is in the workplace and they're warm, people might say, oh, are you getting a hot flush or whatever, you know, or a flash or whatever. And, like, just different things like that. I think as well it's kind of ingrained into Irish culture, Fiona, a bit, that when people feel awkward or don't know what to say, they joke.
Exactly. And that's why I feel that we have to understand that, but also try to change that culture. Like I remember, you know, when I was first involved in politics, I remember one particular debate that we had, and I was the only woman there because I was the only woman elected to town council, and a colleague turning around and saying, because I wasn't agreeing with what was going on, it must be the time of the month. And I still remember the shame and the humiliation and the upset. And it stopped me in my tracks. And I remember just really feeling, you know, teary about it. And I shouldn't have felt that, but it was designed to humiliate me. And unfortunately, it succeeded. I absolutely believe we would not have that now. So we need to change the conversation. We need to change the language.
Just
around
then, Fiona,
that.
To look at, like, the policy, you know, what you're really campaigning for. Flexible working arrangements, so maybe for people to be able to work from home, you know, if they're in physical discomfort or they have fatigue due to periods or menopause, enhanced enhanced managerial training for people to know, you know, in managerial positions, what actually happens for women. Free menstrual and menopause products within the workplace, physical accommodations, so ergonomic workstations, temperature controls to alleviate pain and discomfort, access to risk assessments. So employers would conduct risk assessments. I'm sure many employers do already. Promoting supportive culture within the workplace, and then confidentiality and privacy. So information about menstrual cycles and menopause related to the symptoms would be treated confidentially if the employer did know about it. And feasible paid time off should be provided. These all sound like great things, but do you really think that employers are ready to embrace those things?
I think many are. And to be fair, Loretta Dignam from the Menopause Hub had the inaugural Menopause Workplace and Excellent Awards about 2 weeks ago. And so this was the first time that they started looking at workplaces, and individuals and women could identify places that had brought in good practices. And there was 27 finalists, which I thought was really interesting. And a number of companies that are based in Kildare and outside, for example, Lidl got the award for the best large company that had brought in different policies. Now, some would say, obviously, that it's bigger for a small, it's easier, sorry, for a larger company than a smaller company. And what we absolutely do not want is to put extra expense on a small company, because we know how important our small local companies are to our local economy. But, you know, when we raised that point in the discussion after the presentation, a number of women who were there as members of unions spoke about, you know, bringing in some measures and education that absolutely would be at no extra cost. And the reason, by the way, that, you know, the access to risk assessments was, unfortunately, there was a situation where, which could happen to any one of us, where a woman during her period bled and didn't realise it in the bathroom. And imagine, she was brought up for a disciplinary hearing because of that. Because she hadn't noticed and had left
it in the toilet or around
yes,
the
okay yes yes
and
yes.
She was called out within the workplace
and received a disciplinary. Now I was quite shocked when I heard that, as indeed were all of us in the room. And I have no doubt, you know, that would so rarely happen. Mm. But I suppose when we're in a situation where we don't think of those, we have to listen to women who have experienced that, and to ask employers and policymakers to acknowledge and to address some of these situations. And in fact, before we had the debate yesterday evening, I did contact HR in Leinster House just to see, in terms of those that are working in the Oireachtas, because we have a very, very large working group here, both people who serve the Dáil, the Seanad, the committees, the catering, etc., just to see, was there a policy? And there's no policy in place here. So we have to start, obviously, if we're talking about it as a women's caucus, we absolutely have to start it. So it's just about highlighting the 50% of our workforce who do have to go through this. And it's about supporting. It's far better. There was a lady that spoke yesterday who actually does work here in the Houses of the Oireachtas. And she said that she was on the point of walking away from her job. And she was supported by Loretta Dignam in the Menopause Hub in terms of, look, you know, because brain fog actually is a big part of the menopause. Mm. And it's about having an organisation that will work with you through this. It does get better afterwards. And keeping our women in the workforce, they have so much to offer, so much to give. So it's about a little bit of understanding, empathy, compassion. Not everybody will take on all of the different policies and the recommendations that were made by Stop the Stigma. But even if they take some of them, even if they listen, become aware, and we try and mitigate the adverse effects that are there.
Fiona, I'll have to leave it there. Fiona O'Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator and Chair of the Women's Caucus. Thanks very much, Fiona, for joining us this afternoon. Now, we're switching to an entirely different topic, but if you are in senior cycle and if you're, well, if you are in need of €6,000, let's admit it, who isn't these days? Well, then, luckily enough, we have the Oireachtas Essay Competition, and I'm joined on the line now by Senator Ronan Mullen. Good afternoon, Ronan.
Hey, Caoimhe, thanks so much for the invitation to come on.
Delighted to have you. I know you were on last year and there was a great uptake with it. This year, the prize fund has been increased to €6,000. Tell us again about the essay and what is involved. What do students have to do?
Thank you so much. We're very grateful to Easons and indeed to Foland and CJ Fallon's educational publishers for continuing to sponsor the competition and enabling us actually to increase the sponsorship this year. I think it was 4,000 in prizes last year, 6,000 this year. This is a competition that we started with great support from the Cian Corla, Sean O'Farrell, I should say, to get young people reflecting and thinking and talking about the importance of political engagement for our democracy. As Cian Corla has said in a number of occasions, we need to get people more interested in politics and we need to get more people interested in politics. The more people that engage with how decisions are made in our society, the better chance we have of having good decision makers and good decisions. That's okay. The idea.
The title of this then is Parliamentary Politics Matters for Peace, and that's what it should be centred around. How long should this essay be, Ronan?
It's between 900 and 1,000 words, so it's modelled very much on the Leaving Cert English essay type now, or indeed. But of course, this essay can be written in Irish or English. So the €1,000 is the top national prize for the best essay in Irish, same for the best essay in English. And it's also a 32-county competition, so it's aimed at 5th-years and 6th-years in secondary school Leaving Cert cycle, or for those doing the A-levels, particularly north of the border, be AS or A-levels. So what we're inviting students to do is to go on and have a look at the website, oireachtasessay.ie, or in Irish, aisteoireachtas.ie, and there they will see how they can register, and they must do so by the 10th of November. So they put in their name, their school, their email, but also the name and contact email for their teacher, who's their kind of the point of contact if they're going to win a prize. That's who we get in touch with first. And once they register, we will then email them a code number, and they use that code number then to upload their essay, and the deadline for that is the 24th November. And the reason we do it in that way is so that the essays are considered anonymously before we identify, you know, the prize winners, and then we check back to see, well, who's actually getting the prize, you know?
Okay. And should people talk to their teacher first before they submit it? Is that something that needs to be done?
Yeah, it's always good as a courtesy, of course, to say to the teacher, you know, I'd like to put your name down because I'm going to enter this competition. I think we've written to all the schools and sent posters. We've emailed the schools. I was at the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals Conference in Galway to promote the competition. So I think a lot of the teachers would know about it. It's not just English teachers, by the way. It's history teachers. It's Irish teachers. Gerard Elwood in Kildare is one of our, he's a specialist in politics and society. He's one of our expert judges. He teaches the politics and society module. It could be, what we'd hope is that the teacher would take the opportunity to tell the class about the competition. That might stimulate a discussion about the importance of politics. And of course, this is the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. So that's one reason we chose peace as the topic. And you think of people like John Hume, Seamus Mallon, people who really use their role in politics to try and make and keep peace. And obviously, with all the problems that's going on in our world, and particularly the events of recent weeks, I suppose it's never a bad time to be thinking about how politicians can help. I mean, some politicians hinder the cause of peacemaking. Mm-hmm. So how do we get good politics going in our society? And the other point I'd make is that politics isn't just for those who run for office, like I've heard my colleague Fiona O'Loughlin on with you just now, or myself. Politics is wherever people are making decisions. It could be a residence association, it could be a parish organisation, it could be a trade union, wherever, or it could be somebody canvassing for a politician or a party whose ideas they want to promote. That's all contributing to the decision making in our society. We're called to have different roles, but I think what we want to do at a time maybe when people can sometimes feel a bit disenchanted with politicians, sometimes that's deserved, but what we want to do is get people thinking about, you know, Churchill, I think, is what he said, you know, democracy is the worst system of all, with the exception of all the others. I mean, at least we get to you know, we don't like what our government is doing, we get to change that government, we have the freedom to do that. But it is important that, I suppose, we'd encourage a culture where people are thinking about how decisions are made in our society and how do we get the best decisions.
Ronan, sorry, just because I'm tight for time, I'm over time here. Is there a cost to enter? Yes or no?
No. Not at all. No, okay. Absolutely free, gratis. The only money is going to be going back to the prize winners. And in addition to an award ceremony in the spring where the national and regional winners will meet the Cairn Comhairle and with their parents and teachers, we will also be visiting schools where students get highly commended for their essays, and there'll be cash prizes for those too.
Okay, and if you want to enter, you have to register by Friday the 10th of November, and it's on www.aroctussa.ie. Of course, you can enter in English or Irish. That's Senator Ronan Mullen, Independent Senator. Thanks very much, Ronan, for joining
us this
afternoon.
Thank you.
That's all I have time for this afternoon. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow between 2 and 3.